This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Jason Cohen of WP Engine.
Nice to be here. WP Engine's about 8 years old. We are the largest provider of WordPress hosting, as well as a bunch of tools and systems for people who build WordPress sites, or the people that use WordPress sites to generate commerce, get page views, engagement, etc. The baseline, what you need for a website, as well as lots of things on top of it for people that do that. We have about 500 employees now and about 80,000 customers.
A lot of people think about WordPress and they think about small businesses, people building their own websites. But that's not necessarily true, is it?
Of course, there are a lot of small businesses and mid-sized businesses where WordPress is their entire online platform. We actually have a lot of enterprise customers, and in fact, of the biggest 200,000 domains on Earth, we host more of those than the enterprise CMSs that you normally think of. So enterprises definitely use WordPress, and in particular us. A lot of people still think of WordPress as blogging software simply because that's where it started, as opposed to what is it today, and not just what it could be used for, but what in fact it is being used for actively, not potentially. Sometimes the perception is 5 years behind.
One of the challenges over the last few years for WordPress has been security. There was a couple of reports last year that said 30 minutes after actually installing WordPress, if you hadn't changed all your default passwords and locked everything down as your first action, chances are you were already infected. How much of a challenge is that for your customers, and how often do you have to clean things up?
When you first install WordPress, there is no password. There are installations or people that will start you off with WordPress, quote-unquote, to make it easy. Of course, what they've just done is made it open, as you said. There's no software package in the world where if your password is password, that you're safe, right? You're not safe. WordPress itself is actually very secure. If you just take WordPress and you don't add your own code, it's quite secure. Also, of course, all the stuff around it matters for security. The hosting company matters. Your passwords matter. What other software you put on there matters. Even social engineering. So, for example, at our company, and a lot of companies do this, can someone just call in and impersonate someone and then get access to something? Because that's security, too, and has nothing to do with the software at all. Every month or so, Apple tells you to update your iPhone software. And you go look at what it does, and it says, well, we fixed this one bug that you don't care about, and maybe one little feature. And then it says, and other fixes. And what that means is, like, 100 security problems that they just fixed. They're not going to list them. The thing with WordPress is, like, last year, there were one or two visible security incidents, which, by the way, were patched before they were published in the media. And for us, and also many of our competitors, so not just about us, knew about that ahead of time and already patched our customers, so everyone was safe before it came live. I guarantee you, all the other things that you use, your Chrome browser and your phone, like they have way more than that. So that actually indicates how secure it is. It's just that because it's open source, it's public every time there is one. And so you notice it, as opposed to the things that are actually happening at far greater amounts, but since they're not open, you don't notice, and in fact, you don't even really know.
That patching is an interesting problem, particularly for people who are trying to do it themselves. They use a theme. They buy some plugins. Now they've not just got to patch the underlying WordPress install as it changes. They've got to make sure that it works with their theme and their plugins, or suddenly things stop working on their site. How often, when people come to you, have they got themselves in that, we can't patch this, we can't use that mess?
It's common. And so the solution is to planfully upgrade as often as possible. So what I mean is, unless there is a security issue, which is, again, relatively rare, you don't have to upgrade something the instant it comes out. But if you wait too long, it's just what you said. And it's just like with the iPhone. Eventually, the apps stop working because they require the latest whatever. Well, since you've now waited 2 years to patch DOS, and now you have to because apps need it, now, of course, the risk is high. Of course, something will probably break because it's 2 years worth of stuff. And so the way to mitigate that is to have more frequent, smaller, and planful updates. Planful meaning you say, okay, every, say, 3 months, we are going to upgrade all of our stuff. So that means we're going to have a copy out over here, we're going to do all the upgrades there, we're going to test it, we're going to so that we're comfortable actually pushing that live. We're not going to do it every week because we have other things to do, but we can't put it off for a year, or else, just as you say, you're in a bind. It's annoying anyway to be in a bind. It's actually a problem when there is a security patch that does need to be patched immediately. Because at that moment, if you're a year behind, it has to be patched immediately because security, but yeah, it probably will break something because you're so far behind. To prevent that moment from being a problem, that's why the more frequent, smaller updates is the right best practice.
When we talk about the customer base, you mentioned enterprise just now, and I'd like to come back to that. When we look at small to medium-sized companies, the idea of using a third party to run their website isn't universally accepted. A lot of them think it's going to cost a lot of money. A lot of them are concerned about what they get for that. When you start that engagement with companies, what actually are their key concerns? And then what do they relax about when you've explained what you deliver?
There's always one of a couple of things. I can name them because that's how common it is. One is, my site's not fast enough. Why do they care? Because someone has finally told them, I can't get your SEO rank any higher with your slow site, because Google rewards fast sites. And then Google also rewards sites that have SSL enabled, but that can also slow your site down. So it has to be SSL, but done correctly so that it's actually still faster. There's tons of data out there about how slow sites lower the amount of engagement people will have. It lowers e-commerce conversions. Small changes in speed have large changes in end conversion rate, like just revenue. It's that direct. Fast sites actually perform better from a business perspective. So that's one, speed. The second one is scale, meaning that day that you get a great press hit, and now you got a lot of traffic. This is the moment, you guys. This is the moment. And then the site crashes because, of course, it can't handle all that traffic. That's common. It's not unusual for one day to have as much traffic as all the other days put together, even for large companies, not to mention small companies, because like something hits, or by definition, that's a 10 or even 100x day or moment. Usually, a small to medium-sized company hasn't done things like load testing or otherwise figured out what's it like when this happens. When that happens, a lot of times the notion is, oh my God, this should have been our best e-commerce day ever, sales lead day ever, whatever day ever, and instead, our site was down. We can't ever have that happen. We have to put this somewhere where that doesn't happen. And it's hard to do that. Does that require multiple servers? Does that require special setups? Does that require better caching? Does it require tuning so anywhere in the stack? Just like if I want to make a car fast, I can't just put on new tires. I can't just make sure the spark plugs are firing in exactly the right timing. No one thing makes the car fast. Together, it makes it fast. And so, especially as a marketer, you say, look, I may be able to do one or two things, but I want this to be fast and scalable, and that's not one thing. And who has time other than experts to know all of those things? So that's the second thing, is scale. The third thing is security. So when you are hacked, that's a terrible feeling. Sometimes your brand is harmed if it's visible, sometimes it's not. Either way, it usually feels like if you've been robbed or something, it feels kind of violated. And again, security, same way. It's not one thing, it's many things. Nowadays, because security is in the forefront of so many people's minds, people are being proactive about it. When we got started, it was reactive. I got hacked. I need to go somewhere where it's cleaned up and this doesn't happen again. But now it's a lot like, it's everywhere. So, you know, save me. It used to be more like backup, where no one would do it until they lost something. And then they always made sure they had backup after that. So security can be the same way. You sort of need to experience it to feel it, although people are more proactive. So that's the third thing. And the fourth thing is some kind of service, meaning you've called up your provider, asked for help with this or that, any number of things, and you're finally tired of them being unhelpful, whatever that means, slow or just not knowledgeable, whatever. And then you're just like, I need someone that's more of a partner. I need someone who will help me actually answer questions about WordPress or what plugins I should use for some feature, or why is the site slow? Do you have any tools, or can you help me, or can you diagnose? You may not be able to actually fix it. I might need to have my consultant or my developer do something. I understand that, but can you at least help? Because it's a black box right now. And so this notion of service, not charging by the hour type service, but rather just being helpful and being more of a partner in the site being successful. For some people, that's important. There's lots of other reasons. If I'm a developer, for example, WordPress itself doesn't come with any developer tools. It doesn't come with testing areas. It doesn't come with testing tools. It doesn't come with integration tests. It doesn't come with ways to stage things and test things out in different areas, ways to move files and databases around so you can go make environments. It doesn't come with any of that stuff. And so we provide all that stuff. And so as a maker, you say, look, of course I have some tools, workflows, whatever I would like, either for convenience or to integrate with the production system. But then those tools are interesting. So for marketers, though, it's one of those four things.
If we look at somebody who's come over to you, they often bought a whole range of plugins, bought some themes, and they think they've got these things working well. In your experience, how often do you encounter out-of-date themes that can no longer be updated, plugins that are either orphaned or actually are not doing the job that the client thinks they want? Because all of that then means going back to a client and saying, we've got to change this, we've got to change that. And the moment the word change comes in, the first word in the client's mind is money.
Money that may be just getting me back to zero. At least if I spend money, I want to see some kind of return. Now the site's faster, and one of my marketing metrics goes up. Leads, sales, engagement. Hey, that's an investment. But just money just for maintenance, just to get back to zero? Ew, right? I don't want to do that. Yeah, it happens a lot, but only when people are using unusual things. I think open source has a lot of double-edged swords. One of them for WordPress is the community is massive. The amount of stuff available, themes, plugins, etc., there are tens of thousands of each of those out there, both free and cheap and expensive. That's amazing. How wonderful. You can pick sort of the right thing for the job, and there's so many things to pick from, and if something is defunct, there's something else. Okay, so that's obviously can be good to have those options. On the other hand, they can all be good, just like their Primus album. They can all be zingers. Some of these are terrible, or some of these were good but then abandoned, and that's the other side of the sword. There's a few things to help with things like review sites or other what things are more popular. Generally, as with kind of all things in life, and especially open source, if there's a company behind it, then it's more likely that it's good, that it'll have longevity, it'll be here in 3 years. Not guaranteed, but as good as anything is in the world. Like, integrate any tool, and that company may not be here in 3 years, so it's okay. And if you go off the beaten track, that's okay. You're just taking that risk that I might have to take this over, or I might have to find a different solution since I'm picking something that's more on the fringe. And again, it's great that you can pick that whole variety because there's no one right answer, obviously. But you do have trade-offs. You do say, well, this one's free in terms of paying for it, but I might have to, in the future, pay to switch it out or pay to keep developing it. This other one I'm paying for today, but it might be here in 3 years and save me some maintenance because I get upgrades. One of these isn't correct. They're just different trade-offs, and you pick a bundle of trade-offs, which things you want. That is true, but usually not if they're picking, you know, sort of standard common things that have backing.
If we switch the conversation to the enterprise, a lot of people would be surprised to hear that enterprises are using WordPress. When you engage with an enterprise, is this often for their primary site or is it for departmental sites?
Enterprises have many, many websites. Sometimes it can be difficult to realize just how much there is, but often there are different websites from different countries. And it's all different people who are managing those. And not just because of translation, but also style and character of the location. For example, multinational company has a marketing campaign in Denmark. You've got to hire a Danish company. You can't run that through Google Translate. You've got to do it right. On the other hand, you can't use one of the large, expensive systems like an Adobe Experience Manager, a Sitecore, etc. Those just cost too much to run a campaign on a small site in Denmark in a relatively small place. But it is important to you as a business to do it, but that's just not a good ROI. And so WordPress becomes a good ROI. An example is AMD. We don't run AMD.com, but we run their developer central website. It has all the PDFs of all the schematics of all the stuff that people come to get all the documentation. It's a lot of things. You got to search through there, and then they have forums that go back for years, and there's events and competitions. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. It's really cool. Once again, WordPress is the right blend of they can move quickly. It's not too expensive for them to run this complicated site, even though it may not be AMD.com. So whether it's a specific marketing campaign, a generalized site, like you said, department, could be a product line. Mm-hmm. There can be social things. So for example, with banks, we often run all their social and interactive stuff because we're secure enough to pass their IT audit for security. And even banks are understanding that they have to do that because nowadays we did some actually original research on Gen Z versus millennials, et cetera, and how they interact with digital media. And Gen Z, which by the way will be 40% of enterprise consumer sales in 2020, the digital natives, you know, the ones that really grew up with the internet, not where the iPhone already exists as far as they're concerned, right? Like that's just the universe. They need an authentic experience. They need a personalized experience. This is what they say. This is what they value. Even banks who have to compete and they have to be engaging in all these other things. No one's exempt.
And that opens up two areas which we hear a lot about, but actually are done pretty poorly. UX, user experience, as opposed to user interface, people get the two confused, and applications. And the two actually are very closely linked because you have to flow your UX to your app or you have a problem. When you're engaging with customers, how much focus is there on UX? How much understanding? And how many want an app?
You know what's funny? I think more people wanted an app 5 years ago than now. Several things. One is this dream of like, we'll have an app and then it'll be on the home screen and they'll click it. People have now realized, no, what happens is one, people don't want to download apps really. And two, they have 100 apps and they're not on the home screen. And if the app's not on the home screen, they're not clicking that. And it's actually very little value there. Of course, that's not true of all companies. There are some where the app is immensely valuable relative to a website. But for most marketing departments, the idea that the app is better is not true. Now you have the rise of technology like progressive web apps. and in general things that make the web better, the web more interactive, whether it's HTML5 and all the new JavaScript stuff and React, etc. Then you combine that with PWA, and now that Apple has finally signed on to that with Safari, now you can build things that have very app-like behavior on the web, and you don't need to have an app. You can do push notifications, you can be reasonable offline, and so forth. It's still difficult, but building an app isn't easy either. Building a really good website that's app-ish is usually a better solution than making an app. The user interface just means the design of the stuff, the colors and layout and so forth. Whereas user experience is, how are people using this? How does their work flow through it? Are things obvious? Are there affordances for how things should work? People get confused or not. You're often talking about personas and, well, this kind of person needs to see this and do that, and this person the other thing. Traditionally, the marketing department has their personas and their stuff, and they sell things to that person. And when they think of design, they're thinking about brochures and layouts and text and convincing people and so forth. Emotions a lot of times, and driving toward one or two actions that matter to that business. And then when product people think about it, product people are thinking about also personas, but different. Because often the marketing department's thinking buyer persona or trier persona, and the product person is certainly thinking of the trier persona and then the user as well. And then it's functions, like I need to do this or the app, and they don't talk traditionally. But I think more and more, in part because a lot of times the thing you're selling is online, and so is the website, and so it's sort of physically seems similar. And some because I do think the lines are blurred. I think in the future, or even now, user experience is holistic. There shouldn't be marketing department personas and product department personas. That's not the case. There are people. There are customers. And this entire customer journey, from the first scene, discovery, compare, whatever categories you like, then there are customer loyalty, they leave, the whole journey, however you like to cut it up. And it's not so siloed, or shouldn't be so siloed. The customer should feel like they're having the same consistent experience, whether they're on the homepage, or in the knowledge base, or reading a blog post, or seeing a white paper, or in the app. In the mobile app, if there is one, in the web app, if there is one, in the downloaded app, if there is one, whatever the thing is, it should feel like one thing. I'm at this company, I'm at this vendor, I'm interacting with them. People are embedding, chat, sometimes to customer service, and sometimes back to product, sometimes back to marketing. Because again, it's just people, it's customers, and we just need to understand them in all these ways. And that's complicated, but it's also reality. It's a complexity that's not invented. It's a complexity because the domain is complex, the customer and the customer's journey. And of course, especially in enterprise, the customer might be 100 people. So that's even more complicated. But that's because the world truly is complicated in that particular way. So at least if you're trying to tackle that and model that, you're doing something, tackling a real world complexity, not inventing one, and one that's good for business, because that's the truth. And so if you're doing that properly, whether you want to think about optimizing a funnel or just maybe the better way of thinking of it is, as a customer, I can do whatever I want to do easily without having to ask questions, without being confused, hopefully even with joy. That would be the other end of the spectrum. But even just without pain would be already better than most software. Having holistic metrics like that, having departments work together, to me, and this all came from the question, what is user experience and what should it mean? To me, that's what it should mean. And that's very complicated. I think user experience is very complicated in terms of all the moving parts. It may be the result is quite simple, in fact, hopefully. But it's possible that at least for some businesses, it could be complex. It's complex for us because, for example, we have marketers who are doing things like creating content and publishing it. Some of them are doing that because they want page views so they can run ads and that sort of thing, and that's where they make money. So that's a whole mindset and a set of things they're trying to accomplish. Then there's other folks who maybe they're selling B2B. They also push content because content marketing works really well, but the way they measure success is quite different. What they want from the content is different and so forth. Fundamentally, they're still publishing content, so some of it's the same. A lot of what they're doing, even the words they use, the processes that they use, the way they measure success, so therefore what things might they want to then integrate with and see are all different. And then you have the highly technical engineers and developers building stuff. And it's a whole other universe again. Tools and code and design and graphics files and layouts and staging before live and testing and upgrades like we were just talking about. That's a whole other track of stuff, a whole other set of personas, all that are logging into the same homepage. And then also sizes, the small company, the medium, the enterprise, again, different needs, different attitudes, different everything. We're a good example of something where just the persona landscape is quite complicated. But again, it's the truth. pretending like it's simpler than that and just going is not going to result in the best user experience. Being honest about that complexity and saying, wow, that is hard. How are we going to attack this complexity? That is the correct question. When you're focused on the customer's actual success, meaning what is the customer really trying to do in their life? And the answer isn't just the feature that they're using. So in other words, I'll take our customers. You could say our customers are successful if they launch a WordPress site. But that's not true, because no one says, you know what we need, you guys? More WordPress sites. I wish we had more WordPress sites to manage. Like, that's not what anybody wants. There's an actual goal. We need to increase leads. We need to increase engagement. We need to enter a new market. We need to launch this product. We need to whatever the actual need is. So let's say it's we need to launch this campaign. In order to do that as cheaply as possible, but not cheaper, kind of like Einsteinian, we need to get a site that's going to work. When we throw a lot of paid ad spend on it and we get a lot of traffic, it stays up, doesn't get hacked. Da, da, da. We need all that stuff, and we need to do it in a reasonably cost-effective way and do it quickly, because the world changes fast and we need to move on to other things. That's what they're trying to do to drive leads. If we're keeping that in mind, then even just in creating the site and launching the site, if we're thinking this person wants to launch a campaign quickly in Denmark, what are we going to put on the screen? How are we going to help that? What kind of metrics may they want to see on the homepage? What kind of integrations with other things may they want? How should it be set up in the first place? What kind of knowledge base articles, just for information, might we want to have on file if they're trying to launch a campaign, not if they're trying to quote-unquote make a WordPress site? That's a means to an end. For any company to think, what are my customers really trying to do? What's the tip of their Maslow's hierarchy of needs? What is that thing? And then back out into how do we directly help that thing happen? If that's clear from the user's experience with our product, that's the pinnacle.
There are going to be, tomorrow morning, a whole bunch of people thinking, we need to start a WordPress site. They might be SMEs, they might be large enterprises, they might be companies with a site who are not doing very well. What are the top reasons why they should be looking for a partner to do this for them rather than trying to do it in-house?
It's sort of like saying, look, I know I can go build a scooter from a kit because I can go to eBay and buy that. What are the reasons why I should just buy a Vespa? And it's kind of similar. Many things in life can be done yourself if you want. As a business, you have to decide where is it that we want to spend our time. And knowing that when you do something that you're not an expert in, it won't be very good. And or you'll have to overpower the fact that you're not an expert with lots of time and money, because things aren't easy and free. That's not the case. As a marketing department, you could decide the best use of our time is to become experts in website security. That would be the best use of our time. Also scalability of hardware. Also doing that globally with disaster recovery in case something goes down. What kinds of components we should be putting in the site and how to integrate with various third parties, because of course all marketing departments integrate various things together. Also, developer tools. We should build some of our tools for making these sites so that we can be faster in building those sites. We should do all that as a marketing department. That's what we should become expert in by investing the time and money. And of course, that's probably not true. You should be working on the ad copy and the content copy and getting that out there and refining the message and actually talking to real customers and working with sales on how to get better leads in the first place and all these things that are much closer to what the marketer's needing to do. That is true of everything, even us. Of course, we love engineering projects. We got over 100 software engineers, and they all like building stuff. So even for us, same principle applies. It's all too easy for our engineers to say, we should build our own logging system. We should build our own monitoring package. Again, we too need to ask, do we need to be the world's experts in sending text messages to phones? Or should we just take something off the shelf to do that? We can spend more of our time and attention on things that are unique to us as a business. The more you can answer that question, the more valuable we are as a business. The more we invent a way to make the cell phone go off, we're not doing that. We're not making something that's unique for our customers. So that's a bad use of our time, even though it's a fun project. So it's not just marketers, it's all of us. All of us fall into a trap sometimes of doing things that we love, and the business needs it to be done, but we're not good at it. But if the business needs it, it probably needs it for it to be done well. Or else it's a distraction, maybe we don't need to do it. So that's one trap. And then another trap is the business needs it and we're even good at it. Like our engineers building, alerting something rather. They can do it, there's no doubt. Is that what we need to be doing? Is that helping our customers the most? And the answer is no, it's just fun and interesting. It needs to be done, but do we need to do it? And so engineers are also the worst when it comes to that, because all engineers want to do everything themselves because it is interesting and fun, and also they can do it. That doesn't mean it's a good use of their time, obviously. It should be on things that are special, unique, valuable, hopefully with a customer first in mind and building things that are good for the customer. Funny side note, sometimes we do have to build it. We tried very, very hard, for example, to not build a logging system, just taking the logs of things that happened and sticking them somewhere. The trouble is we have about 6 billion logs a day. And just putting that somewhere, just getting that into a place, is already actually quite a challenge. storing it is actually hard. And then we want to query it, and we want to query it in real time, because part of what you do in security is you're looking in real time what's going on, looking for correlations across the globe. So we tried using all kinds of vendors, because vendors exist for logs, and we broke them all. So we had to build our own logging system. Even in a marketing department that says, we have engineers, though, we can do things. Great, well then you're going to build the most amazing website ever. It's going to be interactive. It's going to be personalized. It's going to work correctly on all these devices. It's going to be well tested so that you can upgrades and do all the things we just said, but safely, because you're going to have all these tests that you wrote and built so that you can move quickly, but with confidence as well, which is what testing gives you. And you're going to have this absolutely tremendous website that your competitors will still be in brochure land while you have this incredible website. That is what you're going to do with your engineers, because that will actually add value to you as a marketing department, not reinventing security. And by the way, you can't get on the security list we're on to get the early warning stuff. You're not big enough to be on those lists. You can't see 6 billion events a day to try to look for things. We can, because that's what we do. And we can amortize that cost over 80,000 customers, and so it makes a lot of sense. Any one of our customers not only can't, but it makes no sense to try to do that kind of analysis. You know, some of these things are just not possible without some scale and expertise. Even some that are, take all of that time and go put it into making that website much better in terms of actually getting the things the marketing department needs, not the mucking about with the servers.
Jason, it's been a great conversation. Thank you very much.
This has been fun. Thanks.